Hello and welcome to Falcon Cast, your official podcast of the Atlanta Falcons. I'm Matt Moore, next to Jay Adams, and our special guest today, who I'm very excited about, going into his 12th year. You and I came in the same year. One of my good friends and the voice of the Falcons, the analyst, official analyst of the Falcons Radio Network, Dave Archer. Dave, thanks for coming to Falcon.
Hey, this is a highlight for me. I've been watching this online and been wondering when I'm going to get invited to be a part of it. You guys are rock stars. Good to be here with you.
Thanks.
I will tell you, Jay and I both, when we're on road trips, the person we gravitate towards is Arch, where it's pregame meal and the plane. It's always a good time, and he's always got great stories, and I'm excited to hear a few of those stories now.
That's because they force you to sit in the same area of the plane with me. That's why.
By the way, can we just say that I'm just probably going to laugh throughout this entire podcast? I'm going to be of no use whatsoever.
So we're going to preview the combine, because next week, Jay and myself and the guy on the couch over there, we're all going to Indy, and we'll be there for about Tuesday through Saturday. And I'm going to tell you, I've been going for a while. I think my first year going was 05, and man, it's grown. It used to be in a little room about this, a little bit bigger, but it was just a little breakout conference room. For media, in the Indianapolis Convention Center.
Yeah, because we're not testing anything in this room.
No. And I'm talking about the media room, how you and I experienced.
Yeah.
And then, man, that's grown. Now it's in a whole club level of Lucas Oil Field. People are going live. There's radio shows. Jay, we'll start with you. Just how big this thing's got. It's a media spectacle. It's must-watch TV. Everything's televised now.
Yeah, it is. And I believe there's contests where you can win, where you can like actually go and watch the testing, which is something that's within the last 2 years. But behind the scenes, you and I know, and Arch probably knows, it's a big dog and pony show with with the media and everything. You got everybody out there, and it's funny to watch the wardrobes kind of change. Tuesday everybody's there, nice suited up. By Saturday everybody's like sweatpants in it.
Yeah, I did see a guy last year who turned jean shorts into jeans. He just had them so low.
Was he from Florida?
I think he's from Tampa.
So. Well, we like to keep an eye on John McClain from Houston, and he just you can kind of tell the mood of the media based on his wardrobe.
And another thing that we will talk about next week in tweets and everything is the food line. That starts getting real
vultures.
As soon as you see a sandwich come out at the line, no one cares who's talking
free food.
At the podium.
It's like the Georgia Dome. It's like the Georgia Dome press
media's,
box.
Media's pretty consistent with that free food. Oops, there goes my mic. Free food, and we're in line for it.
Yeah.
But Arch, let's. You told me before we started, and I cannot wait to hear more details on this. And if you don't know, what are you? Is it your first time watching the Falcons? But Arch is a former quarterback in the league. Had a great career, both in the NFL, the CFL, the World League. Mm-hmm. But talk about your combine experience, because it was not in Indianapolis.
No, it was, as it turns out, it was in New Orleans, and you can understand why they moved it to Indianapolis after some of the stories I'll tell you. But, New Orleans was the home of the combine in 1984, when my rookie year. And so we all came down, and it was very much treated the same as it is today. The players come in staggered based on your position. You're presented this bag that's got the different uniforms they want you to wear on the different days and your numbers and all that kind of stuff. The part that was a little bit different was that we didn't really treat it with the reverence that the players treat it with now. The players prepare for this event.
They've been training since their end of college.
Yeah, my preparation were 12-ounce curls at the bar called Pagan in Ames Island. So, and I still think I hold a record at the Combine for the most Hurricanes drank in one sitting at Pat O'Brien's. I had nine in one sitting, so I feel like...
I would like to see some numbers after, some guys go out and, suck down a couple of hand grenades on Bourbon Street.
Scott Case and I still hold the one table sitting for the most Hurricanes. We had 16 in one sitting. And unfortunately for us, I don't think they call them rickshaws down there, but there was a guy outside that actually pulls you
the
back to your hotel.
Yeah, pedicab. Yeah.
Okay, well, Scott and I took a pedicab back. And of course, got up the next day and performed miserably from the 40. In the combine. Yeah.
What was it like, though? I mean, you were telling me that teams still treated it very seriously, but there wasn't the microscope on it how there is now. And like you said, there's guys that are, working on their form, just getting out of the block on their 40. All since they, after their bowl game, they're training in Arizona, Atlanta, Orlando. I mean, the microscope's really on it now. How have you seen that, you know, both in your playing career and then now as a broadcaster? How have you seen that just transform?
Well, I think the microscope is a media microscope. I think from a player, from a team standpoint, they still treat it with the same importance that they always did. And when you get down there and you're looking from a coaching perspective, you're looking at, okay, the measurables. Because what you see in a college program where a guy's 6'5", 315, he's going to step up in front. He's going to end up being 6'3", 295. So they got to figure that out. And then you put the guys under the heat a little bit and compete with one another. But as far as the focus from a player, from a coaching standpoint, it's the same, but it's different from media. Media's real all over it.
One thing I want to know, though, is you know, you talk about the schedule of events and kind of how things go. And one of the things that they – I don't know if they televise it, and I'd be surprised if they did, and thank goodness for that, is when they parade each player in front of this huge auditorium filled with scouts from every single team, and you're basically in your underwear – and they're measuring you and you're weighing you.
Measuring your hands, everything.
Yeah, we still everything. Had
that.
What was that?
I thought that one of the things that stuck out to me was when you go in for your medicals. And what was very strange for me is they lay you down on a table and they want to check out ankle injuries. They've got a file on you from your college, knee injuries, whatever. But I had a doctor on each limb prying on. It's one thing to have one knee looked at and you're kind of focused on that, but when you got two knees being looked at and they're jacking around with your elbows at the same time, and then my wrist, I've got a little bone, I don't know if you can see it on my wrist.
Yeah,
that's not a break, that's just a natural deformity that I have on my arm. But they pushed on those bones where I couldn't even hold the football the next day. I couldn't squeeze it. So that part of it still, you know, it's a meat market. There's no question about it. They're trying to find guys that they're going to spend money on.
And, you know, a lot of times you'll be waiting for a guy to come to the podium, one of the big names, and you'll hear he's still at the hospital. He's getting MRIs. He's getting, you know, CAT scans.
Trying to recover from his actual exam.
But, yeah, it really is. Hey, I wanted to get both of y'all's thoughts. Jay and I talked last week about our thoughts on the new coaching staff. I would be interested to hear your first impressions of Dan Quinn. But really, you know, this whole new coaching staff, they've had about a week now to really gel, get in meetings, and get prepared for, you know, these next few weeks as you go in this process. What are the coaches going to be looking for, and how will this process be for a new coaching staff?
Well, I think, you know, you got to look at some of the things that Dan Quinn has said since he's been here, and I think the assistant coaches, specifically the coordinators, have echoed that, and that's fast and physical. I mean, Keith Armstrong told a story the other day where Quinn handed him a piece of paper and all it said was the word speed on it. And so you know what Keith Armstrong is going to be looking for is fast guys. I think you get the idea. These aren't guys who have never had a job before. They understand how to look at players, how to evaluate them, things like that. And I think within a week, you know, they've probably gotten a pretty good idea of what Dan Quinn is looking for.
Yeah, and I think that another thing for the fan to focus on maybe a little bit is this is not going to be a complete overhaul of the roster. There are guys that are going to be able to adapt to what Dan Quinn, Keith Armstrong, Richard Smith, Kyle Shanahan, what they want to do, they'll be able to adapt to that. They just want some direction. What do we need to do to play at our best? And I thought that was the one thing that stuck out to me that Dan Quinn said that will probably emanate through all his coaches is the fact that he wants to find what each guy does the best. He's not looking at trying to eliminate guys because they don't do this. Let's put a guy in a position to succeed. And there's some guys on this roster. There's a lot of guys on this roster that are going to be able to flourish in that idea.
Yeah, I'm glad you said that because I think part of this is getting ready for the combine. But a lot of it is looking at your roster and how did guys perform in the previous regime and how can we use them better in this regime? How can we make them better and put them in better spots, you know, to succeed?
Yeah, the reason it was important for the staff to get in and really digest what they have on the roster now is to make this next process. You guys are going to the combine as well as the coaches are going to go up there. And now they have a good idea what they have already in the basket. So now let's go look and see if there's some areas we can tweak and add to the basket that's going to make us better.
And make no mistake, these guys have been working their tails off since they've been here because you think about it, you know, the other coaches that have been hired this year, you know, they had the benefit of having a couple extra weeks. The Falcons made that commitment to wait on Dan Quinn, had to wait those 2 extra weeks, get the staff in here. So now – you're really going through an orientation period with the roster and in some cases with the other guys in the coaching room with you that for other teams happened about a month ago. So they're really on the fast track right now. And, oh, by the way, you've got the combine next week. So it's really Dan Quinn's group, it really has their back up against the wall right now. I know the guys are staying here at the facility so they're putting in some really, really long hours to get up to speed. But certainly a challenge ahead for these guys as they, jump right into it.
And now explain, as they do go to the combine, I think when I first thought it was, I thought every single scout, every single coach sat in there and watched every workout. But it really does get individualized and specialized now where, your quarterback coach is just looking at quarterbacks and he's talking to those quarterbacks as well as some of your offensive staffs. But, the running back coach, he's focused on running backs specifically at the combine. It really does get specialized as you get into this process.
It does. And what's funny about, we were talking about the coverage of the combine and just how big that has gotten. It's really kind of something to watch and listen to some of the analysts break down what these guys are doing in different drills and different formations. I mean, they're going to get all the way down to like how you move your hips. Do you move your hips fast enough? Do you have a quick get off the ball, in a three cone drill? I mean, it's going to get so granular and they're going to throw so many terms at you, that it really kind of gives you an idea from a behind the scenes aspect, what scouts and coaches kind of look at. I mean, they're giving you, the exact terms and the exact things that these guys are going to go over.
Hey, Dave, not only are you the voice of the Falcons, but you do college every week as well in the ACC Network, and you do a great job. I do enjoy your work when we're putting the tie on to go on the road trip so we get to watch the first half of your games. It's always fun. But are there some guys that you've seen that you're excited to play? And they don't have to be guys you watch, but other guys in college. Is there a few guys that you're really excited to see kind of make a name for themselves next week?
Yeah, I guess Maddie in particular, some guys that I did have a chance to do some of their games, and I did a number of games at Duke. Jameson Crowder is a guy that jumps out off the page at you. He's not the biggest guy in the world, probably not the fastest guy in the world. He's a football player. He's a punt returner. He also is a dynamic receiver, rung up some monster numbers at Duke, both in the slot and outside. Now, I think he's a slot receiver. He's a Harry Douglas potential, Julian Edelman type of guy. And another guy that I had a chance to watch, and I think he's going to potentially be one of the fastest guys, if not the fastest guy at the combine, is Philip Dorsett out of University of Miami, out of the U. I think that this kid is probably going to run low 4.3s electronic time. He's hand-timed 4.25 once or twice. Lightning fast, but he's a deep threat guy that will blow the top off your coverage. I think those are two guys immediately jump off the page that I had a chance to see in college that I'm excited to see them transition to the next level.
It's the 40 for me is my favorite thing to watch because I'm not only, yes, I'm there, but I'm a fan. I like to see who the fastest guy is. How much do coaches take on that 40-yard dash?
Well, I think there's a lot to it if you run fast, and then there's a lot to it if you don't run fast. So somewhere in the middle, they'll say, well, that's kind of what we expected. Right. But when you blow the doors off of it, then that's something that jumps out. Two guys to kind of watch, two big receivers, Sammy Coates, the kid out of Auburn, who's a big receiver, supposedly he's going to blow the doors off the 40, and Doriel Green Beckham, a guy that got in trouble at Oklahoma, got kicked to the curb, Missouri, right. Went to Oklahoma, never played. He's in the draft. He's 6'5" and supposedly is a sub 4.5, maybe even sub 4.4 guy.
And then for both of you, real quick, the guys that he's got a little baggage here. We haven't seen him play. He took a year off. Besides the medical, besides the on field stuff, these guys get interviewed by the GMs, personnel guys, and then the coaches as well. And that's a real big part of the combine.
It might actually be bigger than some of the testing goes, for a lot of these guys, especially the ones that have the proverbial black dot by their name. They have a lot to prove. And I think that there can be as much accomplished in your verbal skills and your ability to handle the questions that are going to be peppered at you. Because it is, make no mistake, an intimidating situation when you walk in and there's the GM, there's the coach, there could be any number of guys in that room, and they're asking you some very difficult questions because they only have a limited amount of time. I think it's 15 minutes. They got to find out everything about you in 15 minutes. And if there are some red flags, you're going to get peppered with those questions.
And Arch, they'll probably ask you stuff that you had no idea they knew about.
Absolutely. They've done a lot of background information, and I agree with Jay. I think that the knowledge of the game, the attitude you come in the room with is going to be judged. Remember, you start getting judged as soon as you walk in. How do you carry yourself? How respectful are you? How do you handle yourself from a question standpoint? Do you get flustered? It's all competitive. They try to put you in an immediate competitive element, and there's going to be some questions we know. There's been some questions that are maybe out of bounds that they've asked. How do you handle those situations?
Now, at New Orleans, same thing? Did you do the interview process in that?
Yeah, I don't remember the interview process. I think it was because part of it was because of what I'd done to myself the night before. But, no, there was some interviews. I mean, it wasn't as prevalent as it is now because I think virtually everybody gets interviewed now. Back in those days, there were select guys that they had heard about that they wanted to talk to. Maybe it was a red flag guy like Jay's talking about that, boy, I really like this guy on tape, but what's going on with him off the field? But it wasn't as prevalent, but there were a lot of interviews.
Well, what's really funny about the interview process is that, you know, it doesn't really necessarily, you know, you're going to hear things come out that, you know, the Falcons interviewed so-and-so and so-and-so, and it really doesn't have that much bearing on what they end up doing because, as we remember last year in the third round, Desmond Southward ended up being a guy that had absolutely no ties with Atlanta whatsoever. So,
well, I think that's something the fan has to keep in mind here. Okay, you see this, all the stuff, and they call it the Underwear Olympics or whatever you want to call it. Ultimately, what the coaches will not do, and the fans shouldn't do this either, don't forget what you saw on tape. Because that's ultimately going to be the overriding factor. I mean, there's a number of guys. Think about Vontaze Burfict. Mm-hmm. Ran a 4.9, looked like the Pillsbury Doughboy when he showed up for this thing. But when you put him on the football field, he made plays, you know. And they had to iron out some of the red flag stuff with him. But he's a perfect example of don't get so caught up in this that the measurables dictate who you go with.
Absolutely.
Now, to both of you, should we really focus on these pass rushers and linebackers? Is that what we should watch?
Well, I think from the fan perspective, you know, that's the big area where they want to see some additions and things like that. So that's obviously going to be a big focus for us. I think it's going to be a big focus for the coaching staff as well. You know, we've heard they want to get faster and physical on the defensive side of the ball. I think those buzzwords are going to continue and permeate throughout the offseason. The one interesting position that I think is going to be an underrated one for the Falcons to look at after listening to Kyle Shanahan is the running back position. And what do you do at the running back position with his much more balanced offense? You got to take a look at the guys you've got on the roster and you got to decide, okay, do these guys fit what we're trying to do? You know, like he said in the presser the other day, he wants somebody he can give the rock to. And, you know, he's got to evaluate that. And maybe there's somebody in the draft that he feels can do that.
Yeah, I wrote down on my notes for today, what are the areas that the Falcons will be looking at? DN linebacker, I think, is an obvious. I think tight end is going to get a real good look. Right. If you want to run the ball with some effectiveness, you got to have a guy that can block the edge. There are some really good run-blocking tight ends that also can facilitate you in the pass game as well in this draft. And also the running back. I wrote down running back as well. So I think Jay's correct on that. I think you're still going to continue to try to expand and be better in certain positions. But I do think that Kyle Shanahan likes a couple guys he's got on the roster already.
Absolutely. And I think the other thing, you know, you look at last year, the importance of depth along the offensive line, I think you look to continue to improve that as well.
All right. Now it's our favorite time of the Falcon cast. It's break with Bosak. He's got his fresh Snatterbox Devontae Freeman shirt on. I like
that. It's a nice
shirt. It's very good.
I got one of those.
What do we got for us today, Brian?
All right. Well, I know all you aren't as fast as these NFL players.
Maybe you might
be faster than them. You might be able to run a fast 40-yard. I don't know. But I want to know when's the fastest in your life that you've ever ran. It could be your fastest mile, your fastest moment that you remember running. Like you were chasing someone or you're running away from something.
Yeah, there was an ice cream truck back in 1995 that I was running after. That was probably about the fastest for me.
Yeah, I thought Mookie's effort to get to the buffet line in New Orleans.
That was good.
Yeah, don't let this figure fool you, but I am not very fast.
There was some speed and some agility. Well,
I'm not sure the figure's helping me. I don't know if he discounted that at all.
Yeah, it's very slow. I remember in the middle school, and we did the Olympics, and I got signed up to do the 100-yard dash, and I came in dead last. like in all the heats. Like they, you know, they didn't do the, you know, the loser bracket dead last.
What do they give you that for, a dozen golf balls?
Yeah, you get the participation medal.
My fastest 40 time that I measured coming out of college was 4.7.
Ooh, that's nice. That's great for a QB.
It was good enough to I could move around the pocket, avoid a sack, run for a first down. I wasn't snapping off a 60-yard run or anything like that.
Now, that came in handy when you were playing those 85 Bears defenses, right? Having to run from
Richard. Yeah, not so much. I think I was sacked 8 times in that game. I'm on everybody that's gone to the Hall of Fame with the Chicago Bears. I'm on their highlight team. I'm getting drilled by somebody.
Yeah. Whenever I'm in, like, a Shane's Rib Shack or something at, like, you know, lunch, and they just have the TVs on, you know, there's nothing on. It's just TVs are on NFL networks, like top 10, something. I always be like, number 6, and it'll be a Bears, and then you just see Archer just getting railroaded into the ground.
Yeah, that 85 game was not good. Not to mention the fact that the field was frozen and Walter Payton was going for 180 on us. It wasn't good.
Yeah, that's great. What else you got for us, Bostack?
All right, college, the combine coming up, the college players don't always pan out to the NFL. So I'm just wondering, who's the most impressive college football talent that you've ever seen, and he didn't translate to the next level?
Yeah, you know, I'll start because this guy has panned out. When my first year at the combine, you know, I was like giddy. I want to do everything. I was like, sneak in. I'm going to watch these guys and, you know, scout them. And so I went in and just watched the tight ends. And I've never seen anything like Vernon Davis. Mm. When the broad jump he did, he jumped past like their measuring thing. They had to get extra measuring tape to go get his broad jump. I was like, this guy is a freak. And I'm like, look, you know, he was unbelievable. So, and he did pan out. I don't really know of a guy that I saw that did. I mean, there are those guys, but you know, I was giddy watching that specimen at the combine.
Yeah, I mean, there's a long list of guys who did really, really well in college football and then just never really did anything at the pro level. I mean, you think of some of the quarterbacks. I mean, mm-hmm. Tim Couches.
That's a focal point, and that's one that if you don't get it done at the quarterback position, I mean, you could list all the quarterbacks Cincinnati's ever drafted probably,
yeah,
and you'd have a pretty good list of guys other than Boomer Esiason, of course.
Right, right. But you talk about guys that did pan out. I mean, I remember as a kid watching Orlando Pace and just what he was doing at Ohio State, and then to see him go on to a career. I mean, I remember this one play. He was a lead blocker for a running back downfield, and he was running faster than the running back, and you don't see that often. And so Orlando Pace, when you talk about guys that really translate over to the NFL, he's one guy that sticks out.
Another guy,
king of the pancake, I believe.
Oh, yeah. Odell Thurman from Georgia.
Oh, yeah.
I remember I was like, he's going to be a beast. Look at him.
He was pretty good. Yeah. But he just couldn't keep himself in, ironically enough, Cincinnati again. How about that? A couple of guys that stood out for me real quickly, guys. Reggie White was a guy that went in the 84 supplemental draft to the Philadelphia Eagles. He was a monster. Obviously, we know what kind of career Reggie had. He was a teammate of mine in Philadelphia. Wilbur Marshall is a guy that was taken 11th overall in the draft. He ended up being a beast. We know about Deion Sanders, of course, here. A couple of guys I remembered from the Falcon draft that fit into the other category that didn't work out. Andre Bruce was drafted when I was here. He was number one overall.
Number one.
We came in, we put him in, we had to do some off-season training and get ready for the season, and they had to do a little testing to start the off-season training, put 225, which is a standard on the bar, put 225, it damn near choked him to death, okay? It fell on him, we had to lift it off. He ultimately becomes a tight end out with the Raiders or something like that. And one other guy that we took was Bruce Pickens, who ran 4.4 flat or 4.38 at the combine, and Bruce couldn't cover me, so it was bad. Those are a couple of bad picks.
To follow up on that, Arch, because you were telling me before, 12-round draft, you didn't get picked.
Yeah, no.
And a long day that draft day.
Well, think about it. Okay, you're expected maybe go between 3 and 6, which is what I was told, and you know, you got enough food maybe to last that long. Got family time. This is when they did the draft the whole one day.
Yeah.
Okay, you're sitting there, so you reach 4, 5, 6. Now we're still on the board. Now you get to about 8, you're out of food, and the family members are getting a little pissed at this point. They're a little upset. By the time you get to the 12th round, nobody's even in the room with you.
Yeah.
You know, you're sitting there kind of looking at yourself in the mirror and saying, what the hell's going on? But as it turned out good for me. I didn't get picked. I ultimately was able to select from some teams to go to. Came here to Atlanta, and it worked out.
That's when they actually did hold the draft in the Grady High School. It was in somebody's basement.
That I love those stories, though. I mean, the Paul Warlows, you know, those guys that you know, you're in that category. And another guy who used to coach here, Brett Maxey, he had like the greatest story ever. Not drafted, and I think it was the Saints took like 5 DBs in that draft, and he made it over like three of them. I love those stories. Is there?
I want to say it was like 35 quarterbacks drafted, and I didn't get picked. You know, it was in that same draft though. Andre Waters, who ended up being a really good safety for Philly, God rest his soul. Yeah. And Phil McConkey was another guy that was not taken. One of those slot type receiver guys that ultimately got a Super Bowl ring in New York.
That's great. Those are my favorites. The guys, the Warlows, the Bartus, Michael Palmers, you know, come in and guys were drafted to their position and they outplay them. It's great.
And to go back to the combine, I mean, you talk about guys that can be really helped by that. You know, your guys at the top, you know they're going to go to the combine and they're going to put up some good numbers. But some of these guys can actually really move the needle in their favor.
And those are the fun stories is, at the media room now they have four podiums. And, you know, they'll announce it. Oh, no, Jadeveon Clowney at podium one. And then there's one of them's dedicated to front office. They'll be like, Thomas Dimitroff, podium four. But you hear the guy where it's like, Brant McCracken out of, West Valdosta State. He's at table six, and he's just got one guy with a quarter. Yeah. But those are the stories that are kind of fun to, especially when you hear a guy from Georgia State or Georgia Southern, Valdosta State. That's when it's fun to kind of get to know some of those guys at that.
Yeah, we took one a year ago, or 2 years ago in the draft when Robert Alford came off the board. Little school in Louisiana, and nobody really knew who he was, knew he could run, looked like he had long arms, maybe play some corner. As it turns out, I think he's going to be a pretty good player.
Absolutely. Good job, Brian. I like the break with Bosak. We'll end with the question of the week. Jay will put it out there every week. This is a good one. I like this one. Which of our offensive linemen are best suited for zone blocking? And which will take stronger to adjust? Specifically wondering about Jake Matthews. That is a great question.
It's a great question. It was a slam dunk for me, because especially knowing that Arch was on the show today, he can really break down the X's and O's there. But, the thing that stands out to me from Kyle Shanahan's press conference is that he's looking for guys that can run. And you talk about some of the guys that we've had. We over the last couple of years, you've seen the offensive line grow taller and wider, and that's not necessarily what he's going to be going for. Now, if they can run, great, but I think there's going to be some guys on the roster who are going to have to change their offseason workouts.
And Arch, when you get into this, explain to me too, because I want to know, explain what Jay would follow up on Jay, but what is the zone blocking scheme? How does that work?
Yeah, you're going to come off as a unit, and let's say we're running the stretch play, right? We're going to come off, and you're trying to get your head across the bow of, and when I say bow, I mean across the body of the defender that's probably opposite the guy that's standing next to you. That's where, when you talk about, Jay's talking about athleticism, the ability to move, that means you've got to get across that guy's face and cut him down. Now, it's a one-cut scenario for a back. Is a back, they're going to stretch it, one cut, he's hitting it up the field. It's not going to be this kind of dancing, hitting it, all that kind of stuff. Now, we ran some of this. Don't think that this is a completely different foreign blocking scheme. We had some man blocking schemes. We had some zone blocking schemes. So this is not something that's going to be foreign to this offensive line. But it does lend itself to guys that are quick on their feet, that can make adjustments on the move, those kind of things. If you're a big behemoth that has a tough time moving, you're going to have a tough time making this. Now, this is the same, very similar to the blocking scheme we had when Michael Vick was the quarterback here and Warrick Dunn was running the ball. And we were, 1-2 in the league and rushing the football? So
Alex Gibbs.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, you're cut blocking, you're zone, you're coming across the bow of the player in front of you.
And one guy I think that this is really suited pretty well for is a guy like Joe Hawley, who doesn't, he's not the biggest center in the world, but he's coming off the injury. He's a fast guy. He can move and shift and get his head across the bow, like you were saying. So that's, I don't know that he's a prototype of what you're looking for, but he's more the kind of guy that kind of fits in that scheme, I think, traditionally.
The real trick will be, guys, to blend the zone blocking scheme with maybe a little bit smaller, quicker guy, but not sacrifice the ability to protect your passer. Because let's remember, the bread's buttered where Matt Ryan's standing. And yes, you'd like to implement some more running game, but you got to protect the quarterback.
And to answer Mark's question, how do you feel Jake Matthews will be suited for his zone blocking?
I think Jake is a tremendous athlete, and I think that Jake will it's not something, again, like I said, it's going to be foreign to him. They did some of it in college. They've done some of it last year here. I think Jake will blend in fine.
That's great. Good stuff.
Great.
One of my favorite Falcon casts when we can have Dave Archer on. It's always a pleasure. I love doing it. It's laughs, but at the same time, you're not going to get better analysis than that. And if you're not listening to him on game day, you're not getting the full – those guys on TV, They might look good, but they don't have the analysis.
We're at the game. Yeah, we don't look good on the radio. We try to get, no, I appreciate radio, that. Right? Thanks very much, man. It's great to be a part of the Falcon organization. Looking forward to kicking off a new era with 92.9 The Game being the flagship
Absolutely.
Of the Atlanta Falcons. And Wes and I will be sitting in the same booth calling the games.
Well, thanks for joining us. Thanks for driving up here and doing it. Thanks to you, Jay. Thanks to Bosek and the guy on the couch. We'll see you next week in Indy. Jay and I'll be in Indy, and we'll do some sort of Falcon cast there. Kind of recap the days that we're there and kind of what happened in the media room, how quick the cheese sandwiches went every day, and we'll give you that as those stats every day. So thanks for tuning in to this edition of Falcon Cast. We'll see you in Indy.
Oh, my gosh. That was terrible.